Hello and welcome to the Western Plains Cultural Centre podcast for 16th of October 2012. I'm Andrew Glassett, manager of WPCC. I have with me Kent Buchanan, curator.
Hello.
And Jessica Moore, collections officer.
Good afternoon.
Okay, today we're going to be looking at an exhibition that's currently on. It's Frank Nolan, who is probably classed at the moment as an outsider artist. Kent, can you explain what the term outsider art means?
The term outsider art refers to an artist who has not gone through the conventional arts education. So they're arriving at art making at a purely, not so much naive, but a kind of very pure level. They haven't had necessarily a painting class to teach them how to paint, so they're working at a very kind of instinctual level. And someone like Frank Nolan, who has not studied art and has been a teacher for most of his life, but taken the paintbrush up at his retirement, sort of is a bit of an outsider artist, a bit of a naive artist, if you like. And so essentially his art is an expression of ideas and feelings and thoughts about particular things, but painted in a very crude, very simplistic way, which lends the work a kind of an authenticity and a uniqueness.
There's also a sense that outsider art is often produced by people who are also outside of the mainstream of society. So people who are perhaps not had access to regular education or social services or, you know, various different things. So it's not just being outside of art training, but sometimes it's people who are disenfranchised from society on a larger scale.
Okay, and Frank doesn't fit into that latter.
No, he doesn't. But no, he certainly fits into the previous category that Kent talked about.
Okay, speaking of Kent and his categories or definitions, he mentioned that there is pure and simple. Jess, do you think there's a difference between the two?
I think so. I think purity in many respects relates to it has an ethical, symbolic quality to it. Whereas things can be simple, but they can also be quite dark or depressing or morbid or about sex or about violence, but they can be done in a very simple way. And I think one of the great things about Frank Nolan's show is that it's simple, but it's looking at some very interestingly dark and disturbing and unlikable things that humans do to one another. But because of the simplicity of the works and the naivety that Kent was talking about, they come across as being quite whimsical and humorous and, you know, engaging in that way.
Okay, then. I'll get into the content of what he talks about a bit later on, but the work is called Man of the Series, and you run through a whole number of different sort of, I suppose, not exactly vignettes, but episodes from his life or memories from his life or even long-running stories that take place over many, many, many years, put together in a series, and some are just from, you know, one day in the newspaper, he's picked out some things and he's gone that way. But what you do see, which I think is different to a lot of the exhibitions that we have here, you see the progression of someone as a painter.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, and I think I'll go to you Kent, on this. He begins painting some very simple landscapes, which you probably wouldn't pay too much attention to if they were down at the local coffee shop.
Mm.
You know, they'd be maybe on sale for $20.
Mm.
And then he abandons that, in a sense. Why do you think it took place, and what does that show us about the development skill as a painter? And then when that's done, Jess, if I can move on to you, with what's it like to have a show like this where you actually see a painter change in time on the walls?
I think the with Nolan's work, those early paintings, they are very recognisable in the sense that they are a kind of a generic kind of first foray into painting. So there's simple landscapes coupled with some paintings which are clearly from photographs. So there's an image of a cricket team, obviously a period photograph, and he's basically copied that image across to a painting, whereas the other early paintings are Sydney Harbour, very sort of quintessentially painterly views. And then you can watch that sort of progression where those two ideas start to merge and ideas become more important than the ability to just paint what he's looking at. And I think that it is a very honest portrayal of that early part of a painter's life when they are sort of taking their first steps. They're producing something relatively safe in the sense that they're starting with something easy to paint, something they know, and also something that is going to appeal to other people. And clearly, as he's developed, his confidence has grown. He has taken control a lot more of what he wants to paint. And at the same time, his style has slowly kind of started to solidify. And in relation to the notion of being simple, in many respects, his paintings are about giving you the simplest and most important information and not providing you with too much. So his style of painting is simple in the sense that the people are recognisably people, but there's not much not a lot of detail into how he's painted them. And that's not really the point. The point is that these people are in the painting and are part of a particular scenario. So there's a kind of a trade-off between painting really, really well and spending a lot of time to make something look like the real thing and concentrating more on the concept or the idea and not worrying about that kind of level of detail in terms of the painting.
Jess, what is it like, as if you could put yourself in the mind of the viewer? Because very often when you go into an exhibition, you see an artist's work and there might be different styles or might be different media, but very often it's all of a certain standard.
Mm.
Whereas here there is a very clear change,
yes,
that Kent was talking about. What's that like as the visitor to actually see that on the wall? What does that tell you that a more normal show might not?
Well, I think we in the gallery world tend to focus on the finished product rather than the journey. And I think this show in particular is much more about the journey of him as an artist and less about the artworks that he produced. So I think for the audience, they are going to connect more with the works because they go on that journey with him. And so it's far more about engaging, as Kent mentioned, with the stories than engaging with, oh, look, he's done this one now and he's done painted this one this way. Although that's noticeable, I think it's far more illustrative of his journey into art rather than his skill growth and his skill development. And so I think so often exhibitions tend to be a full stop. They tend to be the combination of a series of works that someone might be doing. We show them maybe four or five of those works as a concluding statement about who they are as an artist. Whereas this is far less of that concluding statement and far more about the narrative or the story of his journey. And I think that is incredibly engaging for the audience and also something that is illustrative to them or helpful to them in seeing that art is a journey, that it's not a full stop, and that the stuff that you're doing now, you might not necessarily feel, if you're a painter, content with, but it's the beginning of your journey as an artist.
That's interesting. Ken, you might want to chime in here. In your work with artists, do you see them shy away from their early work, that they sort of look back now as more accomplished painters and shudder, like you might look back at your teenage poetry?
Yeah, I think I think with artists there's a tendency to kind of, that early work, you're sorting through problems, you're finding your voice, etc. And for many artists it's a case of just keep those in the cupboard. That's not true generally, but I think most artists, there is certainly a cupboard full of things that have been important in terms of getting them from one point to another. They see it as irrelevant or don't wish to sort of show that. I think with Frank Nolan, he started late in life, and as soon as he started painting and people started seeing them, people were interested in his work. I think that's part of the reason why we're able to see a kind of survey from the beginning through. Also, I think that the honesty of revealing that is quite refreshing. And also, we are used to seeing kind of either one or two works by an artist and that being representative of their whole kind of practice. And, you know, that's particularly hard, say, with someone like Picasso, who went through so many periods and styles throughout his career. You couldn't really hold one work up and say, well, this represents everything in his career, when he's travelled through so many kind of aspects. So it is nice to see development. And, you know, I suppose in many respects, any good survey should show your development of the artist practice, you know, from the beginning through to now, rather than just choosing to look at, say, the period when he first came to attention or a series of works that were particularly popular with collectors or, you know.
But I think also one of the things that sets outsider art apart, and one of the reasons why I think it's so popular, is that a lot of people who we classify as outsider artists don't, because they're doing it for the love of it and because they're doing it without any kind of hang-ups really in terms of what I should be doing as an artist, that they tend to view their work a lot more as it's all good, it's all part of my exploration as an artist, it's all part of my, you know, journey. And so they're less from outsider art that I've seen. There's more of a far more inclusive nature that everything they produce is relevant, whether it's the tests in between series or whether it's the early works, whether it's the stuff that, you know, they haven't shown before. So that's the great thing about outsider art. I think that it's far more accepting that everything an artist does, whether it's the tests or the studies or the preparation drawings or whatever, is giving you an insight into that artistic journey. And so I think that this show is acknowledging that. And I think that's what people sort of connect with outsider art, because they can see the successes and they can see the failures, just as they might do in their own artistic practice.
I think what's also really nice about the show is that it, by looking at Frank Nolan's work, you become less concerned about how he's painted something. In the sense, you're not being critical of, you know, he didn't paint that face very well, or because the message and what he's trying to communicate is more interesting or more important, in a sense. So it's easy to look at his work and kind of say, well, oh, he's not a very good painter. But obviously he's painting in a very kind of, I keep wanting to say pure, and what I mean by that is that he's not necessarily worried about composition and balance necessarily, you know, all of the factors that go into, you know, creating a work of art. What he's trying to do is communicate something.
Yeah, and what he frequently wants to communicate, and this was true when he came up for the opening, was to talk about the rule. Constantly, he's like he's like the tourism board for the township of Thoreau. What does it say about his connection to community? Because I take on board a lot of what you say about the simplicity and the purity of it. And it's not self-conscious. He's not being arch.
No.
He's not putting himself above, like, he's not saying, look, I'm a genius who's got something important to say and you should listen to me. He's just saying, here's what I saw the other day, or here's what I imagined, here's what I dreamt, put it in. What does this say about his connection with community and how this might differ to other artists?
Well, I think, number one, the idea of sort of him producing the work and essentially saying, I don't care whether anyone likes this or not, I think is another feature of outsider art. One of the most well-known, most highly respected outsider artists was Henry Dargo, who was an American who produced a tremendous amount of work over a long period of time, and it was for no audience. And it wasn't until he passed away that his archive was found and he became famous. And that's kind of an indication that it was a necessity for him to make this work. And in a sense, I suppose Fred Nolan is sort of saying, well, you know, I want to do this. Whether I have an audience or not is kind of beside the point. I think what makes the work beautiful in terms of him talking about place is that he's depicting things that he's interested in and that he loves. And so therefore, from the beginnings of his practice, where he's sort of clearly depicting the landscape but also depicting, you know, a sporting team lined up to have their photo taken, you know, to an historical figure like Daisy Bates, you know, more memorials spread around, you know, the regions. It's something that interests him and he gets a kick out of it. So therefore it feeds into the work. And so his love of the rule is clear because he's depicting it, but he's depicting it in a very kind of non-judgmental way. Peter Fay sort of brings this point up in the video, in the exhibition, that even the works that are about the Cronulla riots or the works that are about the Kennedy assassination or the works that are about Donald McKay, he's not making a judgment about them, he's just presenting them. He's presenting the facts, he's interested in the subject matter, and he's leaving it for us to kind of make our decision about, well, whether or not he's asking us to make a decision or whether he's just asking us to look, to read the images, and to make of it what we will.
And Jess, one last one. You can begin by adding something to that, but also, what would you say to those who could say, look, the bugger just can't paint? What is the curatorial definition? And what can you say to those people who there will be some who go in, and that's going to be a comment from lots of visitors who walk in and go, my kid could do that.
Yeah,
it's very easy to look at his works and criticise them probably for their simplicity. But I think, you know, my comment to people who say my kid could have done that or he can't paint or, you know, vice versa, it's very much like what Kent was saying, that it's not about the technique, it's about the subject matter. And really, we cannot judge one artist's technique against another artist's technique, because you're forever going to be making judgments that are incredibly subjective, and you're missing out on the point of the works, really. And I understand, particularly for painting, that's a difficult thing to do, you know, because we're so used to paintings being aligned with a certain level of technique. But I don't think the simplicity of his technique, or the crudeness, if you want to call it that, detracts in any way from the power of the works. And in many ways, some of the works are all the more powerful because they're childish and they're simple and they're crude. You know, the works particularly of Donald McKay and Griffith, there's a real power to looking at such terrible events that's kind of now part of our national identity through very childlike eyes, a very simple view of the world. And, you know, it's I can understand how people would make that comment about the technique, but I would hope that people can still find something in the work above and beyond his technique, which is really the point of the show, that and the point of this sort of art is that art can be enjoyed and have power and have meaning above and beyond simple technique.
Well, I would agree. And I think those people who were at the... It was very enlightening at the opening, which was quite well attended, and there was a lot of different people there. Mm. The level of enthusiasm for the work, even to the point of people saying, gee, I want one, which... And it's not in the space where generally that sort of thing happens. Mm. So I would agree. I think it's a fabulous exhibition. And Kent, you've got
I just wanted to say that I think certainly his style goes against the grain. And people, I know in sort of my dealings with people who are learning how to draw, and even with my own children, to draw that simply, people are kind of scared of that. They sort of think it's childlike and they think they should be able to draw properly. And again, I'll go back to the sort of honesty of his work, and also that it's devoid of manipulation. He's not manipulating you. You know, in the McKay pictures, he could easily have had a dark, you know, theatrical sky with, you know, he could manipulate you with a lot of sort of technique in a painting about something as sort of controversial as that. But he's not. He's just presenting the facts. And again, I think that's what, you know, I think this is something that will probably arise in the forthcoming great debate. But sometimes art is not as simple as we like. That we can get affected by something that we really didn't expect to be affected by, or the reverse. We could see a work that is just so heavily painted and so meticulously painting and be left cold. So I think that this is a case in point where technique is not really the point. The point is what he's saying. And I think that most people will come into the show and be moved and touched in some way by his view of these particular issues as well as the world in which he lives.
Yes. Well, if Bob Dylan can be classed as a singer, then, you know, it's open slather.
That's right.
Isn't it? Okay, thank you very much. Next week we will be discussing the Archibald Prize, or also known as the Paintings That Ate Dubbo. just as a quick preface, Jessica, is bigger better?
No.
Kent?
it depends.
Oh, Kent City.
And I'll say no, indeed. Thank you and good night.
Bye-bye. Thank you.